The next is college updates.
College updates?
So we're without John?
He is traveling today, correct. Couldn't even join us via Skype.
Can't Skype from his car, car camera?
He's on an airplane, so he's not doing that today.
Okay.
I'm going to have him leave tomorrow. Everyone going to that?
Yeah.
On the radar? Yep.
Excellent.
Okay. And if you go to the, what we've done, so just to kind of give everybody an update. So the budget was signed at the end of June. In the middle of July, we received some spreadsheets. We actually had a budget meeting August 13th. And that's when we got the, kind of really got some more explanation. And our first actual training on the data that goes into the funding formula is September 13th. So I bring that up because it really did impact a lot of the things that we do, and even our understanding of all the pieces. And there's still some pieces of the funding formula that we're anxious to learn more about. So we prepared a presentation on the funding formula and the pieces that we know. Do you want me to come up and drive that? Would that be easier for you?
No, well, I'm happy to drive.
Okay. So you'll see in a lot of the documentation the letters SCFF. If you remember the K-12 change to LCFF, well, control funding formula. And so our funding formula is a student-centered funding formula. And because a lot of the different things you'll see when we budget documents come up, and you see the three-year report with the actuals and the budget. You'll see up there, instead of having the FTS at the top as we've had in the past, we're now putting SCFF until that actually times off. Because, while FTS is a portion of our budget, of our apportionment, it no longer makes up 100% of it. So on here, we have kind of put together the why of the funding formula. And this is, you know, we have a lot of students who, this is to help reward those that are helping our students be successful and moving forward into the budget. You'll see that we're going to cover a lot of the pieces, and that will really show you the why that this is in here. So this is, you've seen this before when we did the presentation in December. This is the way the it's going to be funded. Keep in mind the base is goes back to, has a lot to do with the FTS that we create. The supplemental is takes into account the disadvantaged population, so those that may have some socioeconomic issues, and then we have a student success, which measures we get paid based on completion metrics. So I'm going to talk with, on this next page is a phased-in approach, and these are the rates. So you can tell that when we talked about that phased-in approach, this particular year in 18-19, 70% of our funding will come from the same method we used in the past. And so they call that the base funding, and you can see that those are the dollars for credit FTS. Up at the top, you can see that the supplemental on the previous page was 20%, and that's a fixed amount, and that's why you're not seeing that one change. But you can see that on the dollars for FTS, that is slowly going down, and that's because it's 70% this year, 65% next year, and 60% of our funding. Then you get down to the student success measures. And when you look at that, the first one, there are actually two pieces, and we'll get into that more when we get to that particular slide. But you can see that the numbers progressively go up, because this particular year, we get 10% of our funding from student success, next year's 15, and then 20. This one right here, some of the changes that took place is the credit rate changed, so it's 70% of the previous rate. There was no change in the rate for the non-credit, the CDCP, the Career Development College Prep, which is non-credit, there's no change in incarcerated or special admin. Special admin is our dual enrollment students. And our base allocation, which is based on the size of a college and the number of centers within it, that did not change either. And those are all the pieces that make up the base allocation. When we get to supplemental allocation, the pieces of the supplemental allocation is Pell Grant, the College Promise, AB 540. And the thing that is important about this is the student can count for more than one area. So if you were a student and you received the College Promise and you received the Pell Grant, we get $919 for each area that they are a student in. So we can count for more than one.
Leslie, can I just say something about this? And this is Pat, I think you and I had a conversation about this, is there's going to be, the state is putting greater emphasis on us to go out and identify these students, right? So it's not just good enough that you have them on your campus, they actually need to complete the FAFSA, they got to complete the paperwork that was formerly the Board of Governors fee waiver. And so the state's really saying, we want you to better serve the center, better identify and better serve this historically underserved population. So identification, so kind of paperwork process, but better serve is actually outreaching into the community, into the high school and places like that, and bringing those students in and letting them know that they could get probably, you know, a free education here at the community college level based on the aid that's available to them.
The next piece, and if you remember all of those, they actually play into our student success allocation also. So all students who earn an associate degree for transfer, we get 4 points for a student who completes that. If the student is also receiving a Promise Grant, we get an additional 4 points at $111. If they also receive a Pell Grant, we get another 6 points for at $111. And again, this goes back to what Jeff just said about making sure that we're serving those underrepresented students, but not just that we're serving them, we're helping them to complete their education. And this is the big piece about this particular section of our funding formula, is it comes back to completion. So not only is it that on the supplemental is to get them into the college and let them know that, you know, getting an education is going to benefit them in the future, but this piece right here on the student success allocation, it is also giving us part of our formula is now on the success of those students. So if you are a student and you did not receive a Pell Grant or a Promise Grant, we're still getting 4 points, and this particular year is $440 per point. But you know, if you get extra points again if you qualify for those other two areas. Our next slide is,
I have a question with you. So the one where the attainment of a regional living wage, I know that was something that was with a lot of the certificates. Is that only still certificate based, or is that also associate degree based?
The attainment of a living wage is a measurement for those that may only come to take a few classes and their salaries go up.
Okay.
So you could actually, this is where you could qualify for more than one, even in, as associate degree, or if you transfer, you have the completion of the CTE unit. So even if you only completed a few of the CTE units and your living wage went up, that qualifies. But one of the things that I want to definitely point out on this particular thing is that it does not count Nevada yet.
Right.
And I know that from a CTE standpoint, they're pushing to be able to count those. And so, now we've got other people who want to, because there's other colleges that are on the border also of Oregon, California, Nevada, Arizona. Mm-hmm. So they're all going to be pushing for the same type of thing, and this is one of the things that at this particular moment that data is not as easy readily available.
This is, it's designed for, I think an example of somebody who maybe works in a local restaurant and they come and take some culinary classes through us, but they never get a certificate or a degree. But because those classes, their employer moves them to a higher level position, or somebody works in a small business and they take a few accounting classes from us, don't get a certificate, but all of a sudden they used to be the front desk person, but now the front desk and the bookkeeper, they get paid. So it's kind of trying to recognize the fact that part of our mission is just to help people improve their employability skills. It's going to be an imperfect measurement, to be clear, but it was because a lot of the colleges were screaming, saying, hey, our mission's more than just degrees and certificates.
So in things like how advanced does the boot camps and advanced does some of the things, that wouldn't count because they're not part of our regular college thing, but they might provide a conduit for people, students, to take more classes or do more things.
Yeah, right now it would not help. We need to, you know, the next step with advanced is getting more of those students into our pipeline to become our students and basically get in our system. And ideally, adult education becomes a pipeline for 4-credit students that want to pursue certificates or degrees, but even in this case.
Yeah.
So.
And I know they do that, but now it's more crucial than ever, it looks like.
Yes.
Russ, you had a question about how you calculate some of the stuff. Like, for example, first row, if they got the associate degree, let's say they got the associate degree, so we get the points for that, for the Promise Grant, for the Pell Grant. Now, when it comes to the transfer to four-year university, is that in addition to that? So you would have that, those points plus the ones they on that row. Now, if it's self-reported, if they don't have the actual documentation to show that they have transferred, like to a university somewhere outside of California, each student still would be credited for that?
At this particular moment, as I started this, we start learning about the points in the reports because all of the reports on this particular page are not reports we can get to. So we start learning about those on September 13th.
Okay.
So I would love to be able to answer that question. At the moment, I cannot.
I do want to just point like one thing out in terms of our mission, and timing's great for us. Is so if you look at that transfer to a four-year university, 1.5 points, 440 per point. So let's say it's, what was the math on that?
660.
Yeah, and so 660, is that right? And then basically, like for instance, right now we have 15 students that started last night in the Brandman program. That's $10,000 the college is going to get because those students started in that program. So I think, you know, there's a lot of questions like, why are we investing so much in the University Center? I mean, the timing is, I mean, a few folks on the outside are like, oh, you can open up the University Center at a better time, because it used to be about butts and seats, but now it's, no, butts and seats is a smaller percentage, and that's about butts and seats, completion, but even beyond completion, labor market value, and transfer to four-year degrees. And for us, we're able to really control that because we have scholarships and on-site offerings, so we can say, go from here to over there.
On the bachelor's degree granted, is that talking about our transfer students getting one later?
No. Good clarification.
There are 15?
I think so.
15 colleges in this community state of California offer that. And this is how they will get additional.
And remember, those are like really unique. Like Feather River has a bachelor's degree in equine studies. And like San Diego has like mortuary studies, right? They're very unique. They had to be bachelor's degrees that no other CSU within a 150 mile radius offered, that are more CTE focused.
Rusty, have you had clarification on the units being semester units or quarter? This, because I don't think the certificate, I know it's not 16 quarter units, but they just reduced the number that we can submit a certificate, the number of units a certificate is worth. They've reduced that in Title V, but it's, they're very clear in Title V about semester and quarter units. But I know that that was a question here. And even with the nine or more CTE units, are those nine quarter units?
They're always semester units is all their explanations.
Yeah. So do we have to calculate that differently?
Again, September 13th, we should start finding out some of the information on to be able to dig into exactly all the metrics they're going to be using and what the calculation to get to what that is. So.
Because I think 9 semester units is 15? I think 15.
Well, it's credited as 15, but there's actually that little phantom fraction in there, right? And it's whether or not they care about that. Is that going to affect us?
Yeah. And the one thing to note on the CTE units, the completion of 9 or more CTE units is one of the things, another item that everybody's talking about, because we have all of these regions for our strong workforce. And they're supposed to be partnerships within the region so that we're all in support of one another. And yet now, if 3 of the units are at Lake Tahoe, 3 are at Feather River, and 3 are at Sierra, nobody gets any credit for that. Even though they completed 9 for credit for a certificate, nobody gets credit for that because it has to be 9 CTE units at one college. Mm-hmm. And so that was one of the conversations that was brought up at the training. And anyway, so that will be, that changes in the future because that goes against what the whole idea of the strong workforce regional efforts are. They broke up the funding so that if a community college gets some money, but then they have to qualify regionally to get more money to support these particular efforts. So those are conversations that are continuing.
Is that a single college or single district? Because I could see that could happen all the time down in Sacramento.
It was a single college. That was why they, and that again, having the same conversation.
Can we help you, Lisa?
Are you losing again?
I have multiple calendar invitations out right now. And the notification pops up right where the volume control is.
So this is the data as we know it as of August 13th. There is still, like I said, every single one of these is a special report. I can't even go in and pull them off of MIS. We have no access to this data to be able to go back into. That's what we're hoping to find out more and be able to get very specific answers starting September 13th.
I'll just say this, just kind of like a big picture overview. I mean, thank you, Rusty, for hitting all these details. This is approved. This is the law of the land, but there's still a chance for evolution. We're thinking that there will be some evolution of this. So we got to kind of keep our elbows out on that to make sure it evolves for us and not against us. Because the small rules are a little bit under attack by a few of the districts that see themselves as losers in this new plan. So that's one thing that's out there. I think the other big thing is, the associate degree for transfer is the big ticket. It's the thing that the system is saying, we want you to be pushing out associate degrees for transfers. And that's why they're incentivizing at this higher level. And it's definitely a lot more an accountability framework in terms of what the state wants for us and then how they're gonna fund us. And then I think the final thing is data integrity. It was important before. It's like exponentially important now because it used to be one report that drove our funding. Now there's, I don't know, half dozen, a lot of different data submissions that are going to drive different components of our funding, and so data integrity is going to become a really big issue for us. So that's kind of the evolution that we're in the midst of right now.
This right here, surprisingly, I'd like to point out that this is a lot easier to understand than the chart that we got from the state. So yes. Basically, the whole promise is good for 3 years. It states that you will get the student-centered funding formula, or in this particular year, our total computational revenue in 2017 plus the COLA in 2018, whichever is higher. In 1920, you'll get COLA for both years with your 2017-18 calculated revenue or the student success formula. And this goes out to 2020, 21. What's important to pay attention to in 21-22 is if you, it's going to be either qualifying for the student-centered funding formula or the rates at 2017 times your FTS in 2021, which that means you've just lost all the COLA for 3 years. So it's going to be very important that those measures that we just talked about, the student success and the supplemental measures, that we really pay attention to those, because if we drop low, we've just lost all the COLA for 3 years. So those rates aren't staying, they're not set in stone. And anyways, I just wanted to make sure that surprisingly, no matter how many times we looked at this and tried to figure out a better way of doing this, this was the easiest way to explain it. So it's just something I, with the momentum of our college and the way that our college is so student-centered and so focused on our students, I can't see how we wouldn't improve those measures, because this college is just incredible when it comes to being focused on our students. And I think our last slide on this particular thing is just some additional items of note. Again, to make sure, we have to make sure our educational master plan is aligned with the goals for the vision for success. And Michelle definitely made sure that that took place. All the goals at the end are definitely defined and aligned to that vision for success. There are going to be changes coming to the 320 report. And for those that don't know, the 320 report is the attendance report. It is calculated in January, it'll be calculated in April, and it's calculated in July. And that is a report that is done in enrollment services. And they're going to be adding the incarcerated student count and the special admit students to the 320 report, rather than pulling that stuff off, pulling that information off of the MIS reporting. So that is going to be going over to there. So that is some changes that are coming. Again, data integrity is crucial, because if our data is not, if our MIS data is not matching, we're going to have problems. And so that, because of all of our funding now being related back to the data that's being submitted via MIS and all of our other submissions, up to this point, our 320s have been included in the audit, because anything that you get paid on, they have to audit. And that's, you know, as a taxpayer, yay. So now all of the measures that they're talking about, this is why these meetings that are coming up about the data are so crucial for us to understand, because we need to make sure that data is going in right and that the data matches, because it's going to now be audited, so we need to be auditing it first.
So will that be part of our current fiscal audit, or will there be a separate data audit?
It is, they're actually working on the audit manual, the contracted district audit manual. And we should be getting a look at it in October. It will not be the audit that's taking place, you know, now, between now and December 31st. It will be the audit that we will start going through next May for the 18-19 year.
I was just going to say, the auditors that do our fiscal audit, they actually do a lot more than the fiscal now. So they audit student services records and different data reports. So I assume this will just be added to their, this will just evolve their schedule.
This is just such an enormous additional.
Yeah.
Well,
they'll probably give us a new fee, I suspect.
And that's all the presentation. Again, as we learn more information, as we go through these sessions and we keep learning more about the data, the pieces, where the report's coming from, how can we double check those numbers? Where are you getting the numbers of graduates? Where are you getting the number of promise grants? Where are you getting these numbers? Where, how are they being calculated? We can't get into, we need to understand that data so that we can make sure that our portion is correct. What if we have more graduates than they say? I mean, from that.
Rosie, is that oversight committee a college committee?
No.
That's a state position.
And they have to do reports, evaluate, and review how things are going on a statewide basis. And that's all appointed at the state level. And there's some, there are three groups. One is from the legislature, one is the chancellor's office, and the last is the board of governors doing the last one?
Not sure. I thought maybe stakeholders. It's predominantly, it's going to be a politically appointed group.
Yes.
So it's not really technicians or practitioners, unfortunately.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
Is there going to be an accreditation element to all of this, too?
Accreditation body is set, because our accreditation agency is beyond the state of California, they don't necessarily sync up hand in hand, so I don't think there will be an accreditation element of this, at least in the foreseeable future. But there's definitely going to be a lot more state oversight.
There is no, I've sat on accreditation both in community colleges, public community colleges, and private ones, and it's about methodology, and it's about balancing your budget. It's not these particular issues related to state, which is absolutely right. It's all about more state oversight. Anyway, that's all I have. As far as the funding formula, we can see an idea of what we've been kind of looking at and learning about. And there's a lot more for us to learn. We have three webinars coming up, September, October, and November. And they're each 2 hours, and so we'll learn about all those elements.
And I might point out the very first one, false neck and middle complication.
I think we can go on to
that silenced all of us.
Get to it.
Okay, I would imagine you guys have the overview right here is a lot of what we talked about just now. I just wanted, I've been doing the presentation, I'm taking the presentation on the road. Because I want to make sure people really understand all the things that now are going to be affecting. Every single one of us is part of student success. If you look at these types of things, and you look about, it goes all the way down to the transfers, our ADTs, our associate degrees. That means we need to all be putting our heads up, looking and smiling, because this is retaining our students. This is making sure, because one of the key things to make sure, if they get the majority of their credits here and then they transfer someplace else and they actually obtain that degree at another college, that college gets those completion, that completion recognition.
Rusty, do you know, somebody asked me this the other day and I didn't know, do you know the residency requirement on that, is it the final units, or is it they have to have at least like 9 or something? Do we know that? Have you heard?
That right, in all the questions that we keep asking, it is wherever the degree is applied for and given.
Yeah.
Which, there was the joke, we were joking around with some of the other colleges at a meeting. You take the first year, we'll take the second year. All of you guys take the first year, we'll do all the second year pieces of the degrees. And, just because that's what they were saying. And again, it goes back to the next 3 months and going to those meetings. Because that's what we're being told up to this particular moment. So I don't have any further answer. It is where the degree is conferred.
I would just say some things, and Jonathan, this is really, your people need to get this. Historically, it's been like, oh, we want to send you on, transfer you. There's the state is saying, no, we want degrees. We want to be able to show that we're completing degrees. Transfer is not enough. Like, if you're 3 units away, don't send the first student off to UNR and look at that. Like, get them completed here. And I can tell you what SNC's offered with the University Center is if they have students that come to them that are, a few credits away from an AA that are looking to enroll in one of their programs, they will defer them back over to us. We need to make sure our counselors don't kick them back over to the University Center to get concurrently where they could start in the SNC program in fall. And they just told me this yesterday, it's just kind of like breaking. They could start in that program in fall, be taking their courses, but let's say they need, 2 more courses from their AA. that they can be concurrently taking those courses here and get their degree here and then move on. So we have a good opportunity there, with our, at least with our universities and our partners, because they're so close, to kind of do that. And Brandon too, Brandon's going to get people in the community that have some college, but maybe not an AA. They're going to show up, and they've kind of said that they typically will send them back over to complete. But we need to make sure the student services and counseling staff really understand this vision around the chancellor's office is saying, we want degrees. And if we could, yeah, go, oh, we don't want to do that. It doesn't matter. You know, we could, you know, create a big dust up and say we don't agree with that. And the chancellor's office said, fine, we're just not going to fund you. And then that will impact how many people we have, you know, or, you know, it will impact us down the line. So we could protest it, or we could kind of get in line with it. I mean, personally, I think you should always leave with a degree, because you never know if you're going to finish that bachelor's degree. You never know what's going to happen when you go down to UNR or San Francisco with your life, your job, your financial stability. You know, get that associate's degree before you go. But we need to, like, really message that, because it's a little different than maybe what's we prioritized in the past.
Which is why we really need to, that presentation that I just did. We really need to make sure that as many people, I can get that out to as many people as possible. Because I think people really need to understand that we're all part of that student success. Like I said, retaining our students is really important. It's really important to get to completion. It's really important to be able to have those things. So if your department wants to care, we'll all gladly come and explain to the best of our knowledge at that particular time. We'll have a lot more knowledge by the time of January.
Well, I think that's a good point, Jeff, because almost everywhere I've been, I've seen students that end up with like 100 credits, 120 credits, and I'm saying to myself, God, you could have had a master's degree by now, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's really important that we start trying to figure out how do we get students to be more focused, not only on trying to get less credits to graduate on time. And that's what the chancellor's office is focusing on, right?
Yeah.
So all those goals are there. But I think another thing too is that from the start of the Success Act being approved back in 2012, I think the way they were looking at things, that by now, 2018, you have a large number of students who are graduating within 6 years, and it hasn't moved. The needle is still the same. Across the state, it's about 42%. So I think that's where that concern is coming from. Like $1 billion, if you put everything together, you know?
Yes.
SSST and things like basic skills and the whole nine. Spent about $1 billion, and still things have not moved that fast. So I think this is revolutionary. I think I give the chancellor's office kudos for doing this. But now is the big moment, you know. Have any other states done this, Jeff, before now?
Yeah, there's some other states have performance-based metrics. Like I know Washington, the state of Washington has one that informed us a lot. I want to say there was like a dozen. Does that sound right?
Yes.
There's about a dozen that were reviewed by the group that did this. And you know, they had the majority of them have been kind of like this, but maybe a little less, like a little bit more like 80-20 models. Like I think where we shifted, or where the state of California is, it really de-emphasized FTS and emphasized not only performance, but then kind of what they're calling a supplemental grant, but it's really an equity metric. So I think California went a little further on that, as opposed to some of the states that I remember looking at when the fiscal work group was looking at this a year and a half ago, were more predominantly FTS and a little bit of performance-based funding. So there are other models. There's none exactly like this. This is definitely a California creative model. And I mean, just so you know, it's even in the 11th hour in the legislature. I mean, little components of this deals were struck behind closed doors in June of last year. That this is different than the proposal that we were all looking at throughout the state, you know. So anytime you kind of, it's a political body, so you get a little sausage making.
Rusty, I want to invite you to our next counseling meeting. It's on September the 13th, so I'm going to give you a warm welcome and kind of do the same presentation, and we can talk about things.
It's in the afternoon on the 13th. We could probably make it.
Okay.
But we are a little busy, 10 to 12.
Delighting up with some cheesecake, I think.
There
a lot of changes here.
So again, all of this information right here, this is basically all the stuff that I did put in the, that we just kind of covered. I just want to, I'm trying to get, put this information, especially the way that we are, the three-year hold harmless, the new way. So our FTS are averaged over 3 years now, so we don't have these sharp jumps up and down. So a lot of this is right here. I'm trying to get it in as many places as possible so that people can see it. You know, the more people that can see it, the more questions, because the questions you guys come up with are questions that we can take back and ask, because not only do we have the September 13th training, but then we have a Northern California CBO meeting on the 21st, to where we get to go and ask more questions than we meet with the chancellor's office. Now, I'm going to turn this over and Andrea's going to cover some of the documents.
So I'm happy to announce this is our proposed budget, final budget for fiscal year 18-19. This is the second read. The first document we have up here is the detail on the Fund 11 unrestricted revenue. On this particular document, we have the FY17-18 actuals. FY17-18 is closed. These numbers are final. There will be no additional changes, unless the audit comes through with any potential changes. And then we also have our FY18-19 final budget as well. On here, the highlighted items in blue are those items that were either one-time or prior year adjustments. Many times in the current fiscal year, we get little tweaks to apportionment and such and taxes from the prior year, which we account for separately. The items highlighted in yellow is our total computational revenue, and it's basically self-balancing. So in total, the number will not change. In other words, if we get more in taxes, then our state apportionment will go down. If we get more in CNIA, then state apportionment will go down. So it's self-balancing. This is 18-19 is based on the student center funding formula, as Rusty just discussed. And it is our best guess at what we know right now. So at the end of the day for fiscal year 17-18, we ended at revenue for Fund 11 of $15.8 million, and 18-19 were budgeted for $17.2 million. Is there any questions about this particular document? Hey, Lisa, can you go to the three-year unrestricted budget, please? This is our three-year unrestricted budget summary for, again, Fund 11. For fiscal year 17-18, we ended with a ending funding balance of 15.36% of appropriations. As some of you are already aware, we're supposed to hit at least 15% for our reserve, which we did hit. For fiscal year 18-19, we're at 14.84%. I do want to note that we have a balanced budget for fiscal year 18-19, meaning that our appropriations or expenditures equal our revenue. A couple of things that I do want to point out that everybody should be really excited about, and I know it may be a little bit kind of wonky to understand. So our OPEB, we have an actuarial that we have. Go ahead.
Does everybody know what OPEB means?
I don't know.
Other post-employment benefits. So it's the benefits that when you retire, different colleges have different benefits for retirees. So it's to account for those and what we have promised in our agreements, contracts, etc. So that's what.
Sure. So we have an actuarial that is done by an outside party, and they basically say, based on your current population of employees, estimates are made as far as to when you're retired. This is what your liability is going to be at this point in time for all the retired benefits, your liability. So we had that done at the end of fiscal year 16-17, and our liability was roughly $1.2 million. In 16-17, so we get to eat, if we can, at the end of each fiscal year, we'll fund a portion of that if we have the funds left over from other expenses. In 16-17, we funded about $177,000. I'm happy to announce in 17-18, we funded $372,000 against that liability. And in 18-19, we are budgeting to fund another $145,000. So in the past 3 years, 16-17 through 18-19, we will have funded $516,000 of that liability, which would bring us from a liability of 1.2 to about $455,000. So that is a huge, huge achievement. And I know Rusty Pine has more information, but we are way ahead of the game when you compare us with the other community colleges. So that is great news that we are able to do that. So for 18-19.
I would just say the why of that, just so folks know, is like, the why of that is if that's funded, those of you that have worked here for a long time get retiree medical benefits. If that's not funded and the college is ever in a financial situation, that could go away. So once it's fully funded, then it takes the question mark of that out of there. Then it's like it's no longer an issue. And I think that's, I appreciate the numbers. Like, you know, it's definitely like, you know, those of us probably like Andrew and me, it's like, oh, we're getting closer, the percentage. What I find most people care about is, so when I retire, that means I'm gonna get 5 years of medical benefits. If I retire, you know, after, what is it, 10 years of service? 10 years of service, age 55 to 65. So that's really the why behind that. Is by having that funded, it guarantees that continues. And what's happened is there's some districts like San Mateo Community College District, they just completed, they funded their OPEB 100%. So it's solid. There's other districts that have had real issues and they've continued to reduce, they used to have lifetime benefits and they have 5 year benefits and then all new hires get zero retiree medical benefits. And so they keep reducing the benefit because they don't have the funding. And so, once it's fully funded, then you could basically, you know, have an expectation that that's something the district could offer for a long period of time.
The other thing I do want to point out for fiscal year 18-19 is the budget does in fact include all negotiated contracts for all the different unions. So those numbers are in fact included in that number. Okay. Is there any questions on this document?
So we were finalizing. We were changing and finalizing to make sure that everything that was approved through September 4th was included.
That's impressive.
Lisa, can we go to restricted? The next we have is our three-year restricted budget summary, which is basically all of our categoricals. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this. These are, you know, our triple SP, our equity, so on and so forth. So basically at the end of when we close the fiscal year, our revenue has to equal our expenses. Any revenue or monies that we have earned that are above our expenses are what we call deferred revenue. And that deferred revenue will actually get pushed to the following year for expenditures as long as the grant allows it. So there are many stipulations as to what can be spent on each of these individual grants. So I'm not really going to spend a whole lot of time in here. We don't have the leeway, obviously, on this particular budget as we do with the others. It's based on what our awards are. But it does include things such as strong workforce. It includes pre-apprenticeship. It includes guided pathways. So all the new categoricals and grants are included in here. Any questions on Fund 12? Then lastly, if you could go to the auxiliary funds. These are all of the other funds that we currently have. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this. Basically, this shows our beginning fund balance, our revenues, our appropriations, our reserves, and our ending fund balance for all of our other funds. One thing I do want to point out is if you go to Fund 43, if you look in fiscal year 18-19, you can see we have our Series B bond series.
I think
in there.
I may have done something wrong. I only see two pages. I'm concerned. I didn't fully load all the rest of the fund pages.
This is usually just what we bring. We don't bring the
details. Oh, all the detailed ones. Okay.
Yeah. So this is just summary. We have detail, but this is just summary. So we do have the additional funds for our Series B. Expected to be a large chunk of them to be spent next fiscal year. Fund 44 is our University Center Capital fund, and we are not obviously expecting as many expenses in this particular fund. We will now have it in Fund 11 in a special program to account for all of the costs that are associated with the University Center. We do have a reserve in here for some equipment replacement and some other contract requirements for reserves for the University Center.
And if I could just add something about that, just for understanding for those. So we were required, in order to accept the $5.8 million, we couldn't get the final check until we had $200,000 of our own money set aside. So that was, we just, the last $1.8 million check, we sent checks in the mail, that's what I heard yesterday. So we wouldn't get that last $1.8 million until we could demonstrate that we had $200,000 set aside, because they wanted to make sure we had money. And it's got to be restricted for maintaining that building. And then you'll see the $18,000 revenue in, that's coming from fees from SMC and Brandon and other users that they're basically putting money in every year to have a reserve for technology replacement. Because there's pretty advanced technology over there, it's going to require replacement. So that way, those who are using the facility are, you know, setting aside funds for that.
And then on the screen, as you see right now, we actually have two Fund 59s, which may look a little odd, but we segregate them by different programs. One of them is for community education, and then we also have the Community Play Consortium, which is a partnership with the City of South Lake Tahoe for all of the soccer fields that we have. And we do, because we're the fiscal agent for the Community Play Consortium, that's why we account for them in this particular fund, so we keep them distinctly separate to not mix them into any district business. Last year we did not have a budget for the Community Play Consortium, but now we do. Things are much more organized and definitive, so that's why we were able to do this. And I know that the Community Play Consortium does pay us, about us being the district, about $31,000 for fees for being the fiscal agent, which covers my time, Rusty's time, Jeff's time, a number of things, some of the fees that are incurred with the fields and such. And then there are also expenses directly expense to the Community Play Consortium. And if you scroll down, those are just the additional funds that we have. Our self-insurance, which has like our liability insurance, our retiree benefits, that's for our pay-as-you-go, so the retirees, we're getting paid retirement benefits, the health and welfare, our student representation fees, our financial aid is basically an in and out with our Pell Grants, Cal Grant, etc. And then we have our OPEB trust, which houses, as we discussed, our OPEB funds.
I think one other thing that's, it doesn't show up in these documents, but it's important to know. Last year and this year, the Child Development Centers required a contribution from district funds greater than, ranging from $50,000 to $75,000, depending on the years. That's pretty significant. A few years ago, it was $15,000. So it's hemorrhaging cash over there right now. So I know there's a lot of pressure on solving things over there, and I've kind of directed the director to say, we need to come up with a revenue standpoint, because it can't just be a one-sided thing where just the district continues to take funds away from district programs. It is one of our programs, but from, you know, whatever it is, four credit classes or other departments, and take those funds and continue to push them over to the CDC. But the CDC needs to also have some responsibility for their revenue side of their business model. So that's something we're looking to solve, you know, kind of work out this year. You know, we're lucky that the district's been in a place to really increase those financial contributions last year and into this year's budget. But it's significantly more than it's been in the past. So that's something that we need to kind of, you know, we got to figure out to have a long-term solution, because it's not, it's unlikely to be consistent that the district could continue to keep increasing its amount by, you know, $30,000, $20,000 year over year, keep increasing the amount that's contributed to the CDC to underwrite its operations.
And to tag on to that a little bit, that is correct, that about the transfers being higher. And 18-19 does include a fee increase at the CDC.
Yeah. Was it 5% fee increases that they did?
Yes. Any questions?
I saw the documents that were attached. The last one we handed out kind of talks about some of the things that we did. As far as the front page, where it talks about the budget strategy, then talks about revenue, I'd like to point you to the second paragraph, because the that talks about when we received the spreadsheets from the chancellor's office in the middle of July, we were noticing a few different our FTS calculations weren't matching what they were putting down, so we've been working on digging into that and making sure that we are accurate. And so that's the spreadsheets that are in the chancellor's office are not going to match our numbers, because we definitely knew of some differences in FTS. Then if we turn around to the next page,
You'll see under the revenue assumptions, that's for Fund 11 only, and you can see that we've done the calculation both for our student-centered funding formula and our hold harmless amount. And I highlighted the one that we are using to do our calculation, and that is the student success funding formula. You can see the difference between the two. Some of the important revenue assumptions or expenditure assumptions are, we do have 90 total full-time equivalent faculty, that's full-time and adjunct. We have some resignations, some new positions throughout there. We did hire a TPNS teacher. We do have, we're in the process, are we in the process now of hiring the library technician? We started that, right?
Yes, it's posted, yes.
And then I wanted to make sure that everybody knew that we remembered, last year, Ida went to the board to invest in some staffing in particular areas to see if we can improve our FTS in those particular areas and provide some more assistance in face-to-face. And we did go back and we made sure that all of those were continuing throughout this year because the deadline on those was June 30, 2019, was the latest deadline on those. And we do know that at least one of the programs has already met the metrics, not only for last year, but the current year. Some staffing, you know, notable changes. Again, the staffing investment was about 130 new positions. These are new positions, the making sure that we have the money set aside for the faculty hiring process, new classified positions that have been approved already, you know, the library, and other various, some little, other various positions that aren't necessarily full-time, but hit both all over the district. Then we have the compensation and benefits, we have the step and column, negotiated contractual, stirs and purrs, and OPEB. I do need to change that because we were working on the CDC at the last minute, making sure to include all of the, everything that was done. So that should be 145. And then all of our third-party contracts, we have contracts, multi-year contracts, especially for like the Lucy and Inet, and then we do have a new janitorial contract for multi-year, and they have already set fee increases included in them. And so that comes to about 131.
On that FTES discrepancy with the Chancellor's Office, how large a discrepancy was that? And you know, did it get better for us or worse?
The discrepancy is, I don't know how they're calculating, they're pulling information off of MIS, and that's one of the things we're trying to figure out. We definitely moved with the number that we knew to be absolutely true and correct, and so it did bring down the apportionment sum of what the additional money that they were.
One easy example, Kurt, is that we submitted our P2 in April on, what, 1720 FTS? Is that about right, in that ballpark? And we found out at the end of the year, due to some positive attendance management issues by the JPA, that their FTS was down about 60 FTS. So that was about 60 FTS high. That's about $300,000 in the old model, yeah, just to kind of give you a sense of it. So that was a significant one. I think the other significant one was the incarcerated student program. Because of how these funding metrics work, that's a funding, that's a population that gets a little different funding stream. And in the model, it said we had something like 600 incarcerated student programs, students, do I have that correct? Mm-hmm. And our current number is, what, 250? So that one was pretty distinct. We're like, wait, 600? And to give you a sense, it showed Coast Community College District, which has the largest incarcerated student program in the state, it said they have zero. So what's gonna happen here is they're sending us basically a 320 on steroids report to complete this fall. And all the districts are going to have to actually submit their real data, and then they're going to kind of recalculate all this. And so talking to some of my peers in the state, Russell talking to some of my peers in the state, the folks that I think were pretty savvy and that were realizing that their stuff was off were building their projections based on what they know to be true. Because if not, all that happens is the state says, oh, here's your advanced apportionment number, but we retain the right to correct it. Mm-hmm. And they send you that report to fill out in fall, and you give them the right numbers. And then they say, oh yeah, wait, now here's your new number. So,
and then they ask for any money that you got, they ask for it back. So, so we definitely, and Coast was, that was a big discussion, which is why if you go back to the funding formula piece where it talked about two elements being added to the 320 report, the incarcerated and dual enrollment, the special admin students, came about because of that particular thing, that they know. Coast having zero is, everybody in the entire state knows that's wrong. And so that's why there's some questions in that particular area.
I've been kind of saying it's like 12, 18 months, we'll know what really we're going to get.
Well,
you know, we're going to have to get through a cycle. We're going to go through a cycle to really know.
And that's why these meetings that are starting on September 13th, they're actually meeting and looking at the data. And this is why Donna has been working very hard for the last 2 days with a team that's been paid for by the chancellor's office to help us with our data integrity and to be able to dig into very certain areas to make sure we understand how the chancellor's office is calculating it and to make sure that the stuff, you know, we're in alignment, that we're calculating the same way, that we're submitting information the same way that they are expecting it. Because data definitions are really important as long as everybody reads them the same way. Which, yeah. So anyway, I just wanted to definitely make sure to point that out because we did make some changes and I do know that there was, that was a change that we definitely made on our end to make sure that we were reporting the right numbers that we needed to be true and correct. Especially after finding out about what happened with Coast. So if everyone is in agreement, if we can get a recommendation, approval to make the recommendation to the superintendent president to submit the budget to the board of trustees.
And I would just say, I mean, I appreciate the recommendation. Do you know that there's a level of uncertainty with this budget that we haven't had for a long time? Since probably like when the college was in the trigger cut era, which actually before I arrived, and it was like, oh, what's going to happen? It prop, what was it, prop
30
passes in November, we'll get this. If it doesn't pass, that's the last time we've been in this level of uncertainty. And so it's definitely one of those things that we're concerned about. And I think going back to the slide deck, when the FTS based portion of your funding goes from 70 to 65 to 60, if all things stay equal about our student population makeup, right, underserved populations, number of ADTs, number of transfers, we actually lose 300,000 each year or 2 years cumulative?
2 years.
300,000 if we don't improve. Because right now it's a larger chunk is based on FTS based. So we got to do better, right? We have to maintain the same, because the formula is going to get more performance based each year for the next 2 years. To maintain the same, we need to do better. So that does, I believe we can do better. I think a lot of this is going to force districts. The reason the chancellor's office did this is they want to, you know, what gets measured gets done, right? So they're trying to put greater emphasis on these outcomes and really, you know, kind of have a little harder line on colleges on delivering results. But just know it's an uncertain time.
And when the budget gets posted, you'll be able to put a piece in the budget book to demonstrate how our funding came about in each of the three phases. Okay. So, I'm sorry. I forgot I'm doing this meeting. The vice standing reports for Vice President of Academic Affairs. Thank you.
I would just say that we are.
Real quick, actually, can we just Amber and Andrea and the whole office, and Anthony, we want to thank you guys for your work. This is a crazy time of year for you guys. You guys need to go to Heavenly tomorrow, or is it? Are you there?
Yes.
Okay, good. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yes, we actually just finished. We just finished printing. Literally, what? 2 hours ago, the budget book. So we're trying to get them out to the board so that they can pass that. So this will be, we'll be able to put this up on the website.
A lot of work.
Yes, a lot of early morning. We had a goal this particular year to make sure that we had our all of our first drafts in by last Friday so that everybody could enjoy the entire 3-day weekend and nobody learned.
Except, of course, our graphic design.
Yeah. So, and they really, everybody was double checking each other. They really, they would write something, they sent it to the next person, sent it. So every single one of us had eyes on all the pieces. We were double checking all the numbers. And then Mary Ellen double checked all of us. And so anyway, they really worked hard. They've been working weekends since July because not only are they getting the numbers to produce this, but a big piece of moving forward with this is closing all the numbers for 17-18. So they had to close all those numbers before we could finalize these numbers. And so they have all the numbers in, everything's submitted to the county so that our books can be closed. So it's really, we all see the budget stuff right here, but this is a small piece of what they've done in the past, 2.5 months. So just really, definitely kudos to them and Nick. I just want to make sure that nobody forgets that Nick is very involved in this, right? So now, Michelle, mm-hmm. Have something?
So I just wanted to let people know that we are working on kind of finalizing some convocation activities for the faculty. On Wednesday, the faculty will come back. They'll have about a 2-hour kind of coming back together team training kind of activity. And then we'll be working over in the University Center on guided pathways and creating meta majors and deciding what we're going to call those, if we're going to call them meta majors or something else. And then on Thursday afternoon, following the state of the college and the keynote speaker and the lunch, we'll be going back to that work to kind of more finely tune kind of some of the goals of the meta majors that we've determined. The Guided Pathways work team worked all last year with some all faculty days and the work out of those days to narrow the categories down. So we'll be kind of starting with 6 general meta major type categories. And a meta major, for those of you who aren't aware, is kind of an overarching theme that pulls together a number of degrees and certificates that have commonalities, whether it's in values or job prospects or coursework. And then it allows students to pick kind of a general area and move forward without having to really specialize immediately and not fall behind. So they can be moving toward, if they know they want to be in the arts or they want to be in social sciences or they want to be in STEM, they can start that process without deciding on chemistry or English or studio arts right off the bat. So we'll be working on kind of grouping those and figuring out what that looks like for LTCC. That's really the work of the year for the faculty. And we'll be working kind of more and more specifically on that as the year goes by. And starting big and kind of getting more detailed work down to the course level and how we map our courses. And we are, I know you've received the information about Friday, but we will be having kind of the inaugural event of the Coyote Kickoff from 11 to 2, and that promises to be a really exciting time on campus out on the plaza in front of the library, where there will be lots of activity and food and faculty kind of interacting with students. We're hoping to get a lot of students on campus, maybe their parents, maybe community members, and really have faculty showcasing and student services and other services for students on campus really showcased so that new students and returning students can feel welcome before school starts on Monday. We had 2 weeks of a run with a new theater company in town called Black Ice of a play called Night Mother. Thanks. Donna and I watched it together the other night, and it really was great. I don't know how many got an opportunity to see it, but it was very moving, very thoughtful production, I thought, very well done. So we are definitely seeing a lot more interest in kind of partnerships and working with groups in the theater and really getting some exciting things happening there. And yeah, just a lot going on with Guiding Pathways and scheduling and trying to turn some ships that have been 40 years in the construction and trying to get them on new, in heading in new directions. So I think we're doing good work.
Okay. I'm going to be making an executive call here, and Jonathan, do you have anything that you would like to add?
Not much. I just want to say that I've been just trying to develop stronger partnerships with the school district. I've met with the principal. I've checked on some of the programs, like the TRIO program. We had a little blip with that, trying to increase the numbers of participants in the ETS program. We were able to get the numbers up to 500 the other day, so we're back on track. We were able to also fill that position with Claire Stewart, who's not going to be taking over that position. We interviewed some people, but I just wasn't really happy with what I saw, so I thought she'd be a better fit. We're going to have a cheesecake party next week for them, because Julie was able to come along with the student ambassadors, go over to the high school and bring those numbers up. So we're really happy about that. Waiting to see if they're going to actually refund us, not refund us, but actually to provide funding for the next 5 years. I'm really afraid of what the consequences would be if we don't get that funding, because that would impact both the high school and the middle school. Keeping our fingers crossed, but I think they're going to be really happy, because we were looking at 450 in terms of the number of participants, and we were able to exceed that by 50 students. So I think they're going to give us the approval. Besides that, looking forward to meeting all of the new faculty when they come back. I have met with the counselors. We're getting on board with a number of different agendas, so I'll be able to give you more information about that at the next meeting. But so far, so good.
From administrative services, obviously you can see what my focus has mostly been. I will say that we also have, those of you parking up here saw that Starx starts tomorrow. And so the National Guard brought their stuff up arrived last night, and they are setting up so that they are prepared to start first thing in the morning. Starx is a search and rescue. This is a search and rescue expo for the entire state of California. So this is search and rescue teams throughout. It's hosted by El Dorado County this year. And so they have been willing to partner with us. The nice thing is not only do our wilderness faculty get to go, our fire academy faculty, and then I do believe that some students were chosen from the most recent class so that they get to go and they get a unique experience of finding out with search and rescue and some of the things that they do. Doing classes all over. There's also the soccer tournament this weekend. So there was a game last night, there's a game tonight, there's a couple games tomorrow. And I'm sorry, what?
Oh, no, I just forgot that was happening. That's crazy.
And then,
we need to get better at scheduling as a college. We left hand doesn't talk to the right hand around here often.
And so we have two games tomorrow night, 5 and 7, and then we have games both Saturday and Sunday also. So if you are planning to come, an email did go out from M&O. Explaining that please don't park on the at the campus. If you're going to go to the game, please park in the parking lot over there.
The city hall.
I'll just say, matching to what you just said. I mean, I think there is some of that where we're all kind of being approached by different groups. But I also think what I'm experiencing in the scheduling piece, especially around the theater, is that there's just so much more. I mean, we really are, I think, trying to become this destination, and what that means is that, you know, we are not yet able to or really willing to say no to people very strongly, you know, and kind of say, no, we've prioritized this one. So we're still trying, I think, to be so open and embracing of a lot of events. And what that does is it creates a lot of complexity, a lot of events, a lot of overlapping things, and we're trying to all fit in what we can do. So I do think there is some, but I don't want it just to seem like nobody knows what's going on.
No, it's a good thing. It's a good thing because we're having a lot of local, regional, and statewide activities happening in our campus. So in that regard, I think it's great. I mean, soccer and SARX clearly didn't talk to each other. That was a little bit of a miss. And then you had a fire academy coordinator send an all staff email going, do they know SARX is that day? It's like, yeah, we actually planned to have everyone off site so we could have SARX. So there's a little interdepartmental communication that needs to happen. But to Michelle's point, I absolutely agree with you. The exciting thing is, hey, this facility is being utilized. And it's serving our community, it's training public safety, there's theater performances. I mean, that's way better than having this being a sleepy, dead facility.
Well, the complexity of our schedule, we actually, scheduling, maintenance, and operations, and a few other actually get together ones we need to talk about the events coming up. This conversation between the athletics and SARX did take place for the past. Past few months. So those are the two big events going on. And from my area, and now, Jeff.
Cool. So very similar, just exciting times. Just do know that Brandon, they started last night. So their bachelor's program started last night. Their numbers were at 15 plus last time I heard. I think they probably ended up even a little bit higher than that. So that's exciting. SNC's been going for a few weeks now. SNC is actually in the office space out there, so they do have an office space in the University Center. They're not there 40 hours a week by any means, but they do have space out there. I was in the University Center on Tuesday for a meeting, and it's exciting because there's just some random students that popped in and wanted to know about programs. So I think that's the the pipeline we might want to build. We might someday want to have our transfer activities out there, so students really just naturally go there when they start thinking about going to the next step. But kind of glad to see that taking off. We have those Maloff Scholar Scholarships, $2,000 a piece that should be allocated soon to students who are in those programs. So that's off and running. I would just say, as with anything, it's gonna kind of take us time to get that building really operating and really kind of build up the buzz. But I'm sure for the students who are involved in the program, it's a game changer for them. The numbers might still be small, but it's definitely a game changer for them. Trying to figure out how best to utilize that facility. So more on that. And then, tomorrow's obviously a big day. Everyone in this room coming tomorrow? Coming? Cool. No? Maxine, how are you not coming tomorrow?
I know, I had people coming in town. I'm on vacation this week.
Okay.
I just came in for the meeting.
Got it.
I know, I tried to change it, but.
You will be missed, so.
I know, it looks like it's gonna be great.
Yeah, I was on vacation last year and missed it, so I really look forward to it.
Oh, yeah.
Cool.
No, it's my turn.
Cool, you can actually trade off. So, definitely looking forward to tomorrow. Tomorrow's mostly supposed to be just a fun day to spend with colleagues. There'll be a little presentation in the morning by Lisa Culp, who I haven't seen this presentation. I'm really excited to see it. It sounds really cool. But mostly just a day to spend with colleagues and challenge yourself personally or just relax up on the mountain or somewhere in between the spectrum. So looking forward to that. And then obviously convocation next week. Very excited about the activities that we have happening Wednesday through Friday. On Thursday, I hope folks will, of course, remember we're kind of closing campus till 1, so we'll be close to 1. We'll have a breakfast starting at 7:30 on the courtyard, which is kind of that little space outside the University Center. So for folks who haven't been over there yet, we'll have a chance to see that. State of College, including kind of an introduction from the board chair, and then my State of College address will be from like 8:30 to 10 or so. And then we actually have a keynote speaker following me that I'm really excited about. His name is Shola Richards. He has a book called Make Work Work, and it's about just making work enjoyable for yourself, your peers, and your customers, or in this case, our students. And it's a New York Times bestseller, so it's a pretty, he's kind of the dude, it's kind of a popular book. And it was so popular that he just got re-upped for this other book, Go Together, that actually released this Tuesday. And he's on a 2-month speaking tour, and it just so happened that he had a window that he was able to swing into Lake Tahoe. And I got a chance to see him earlier this year, and he's the most engaging speaker and the best message I've seen in the last year. So excited to kind of bring him to campus and have other folks be able to hear his message. And then finally, we will all kind of head over to the Student Center after for a luncheon, and we'll be celebrating some folks. We've got a few folks that are hitting 25-year milestones, so I'll be recognizing them and introducing some of our new employees that we've hired over the last year to campus, especially now that all the faculty are back, and hopefully a really good day, and then of course a lot of important work and guided pathways. So yeah, please spread the word, and you know, look forward to your participation. And then we're off. Start of school year is upon us. And that's all I have.
Okay. Are we going to review the work Tuesday agenda?
We don't have a posted agenda yet because we had a special meeting last Tuesday night. But we will, the bulk of the agenda is going to be the budget. That's really the meat of the agenda. I don't know, will we have a CPR comprehensive program review?
Yes.
And then a humanities comprehensive program review, which you guys saw.
Oh, I'm sorry, we have the humanities one.
Humanities, yes.
What
is
was
it.
The first one you said?
I just said CPR and then I said humanities.
Oh, yeah. Humanities.
So we'll have that. And the governance committee saw that last spring. So yeah. It's just finally getting around to the board.
Yeah. We've done some editing to it, but mostly just to clarify, kind of combine some of the goals, but not really editing any of
that. Kind of the format of how it plays out. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that is the gist of that.
Okay. I know it says that the next meeting is today. But.
All should be aware that Lisa did not post this.
You blame me, I don't care. We'll be meeting in October, probably I think first week of October, when our regular meeting schedule starts again.
Right, if there's no other comments or questions, then we're adjourned.